So yesterday, for my younger daughter's birthday, we went to a concert in Charlotte. She's a student at UNC Charlotte, so my wife and myself and my other daughter from Greensboro headed to Charlotte for a concert, and the concert ended last night. Now, my wife and Elizabeth are staying there overnight in a hotel to spend some time with Rebecca today, but I came home. So I got home about 1:30 and got up about 5:15 for the early service this morning. So I'm getting too old for this. And I got to do everything I can to not fall asleep during my own homily here, my own sermon. The gospel reading this morning really invites me, engages me more than any of these other readings. It reminds me of some things I've shared with you before about some of the stages that religion can go through. Some of this is from Richard Rohr. You may remember my mentioning him. I want to share something about that once again to sort of put this in some sort of context. It's that reading where, you know, Jesus says, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say. And he goes through all these, but I say. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn the other cheek, but I say. It's a whole list of that. You've heard it said, but I say. Richard Rohr suggests in the religious development, there are some, if you want to call them, sort of like stages that we go through. I've shared some of this before. I want to do it briefly to kind of put this in context. The first stage of religion, and it's not just about Christianity or Judaism, it's sort of common to just any religious tradition. The first stage is what you might want to call a belonging system. People gather together and belong. And that belonging community, that belonging system has definition, it has clarity, it has rules, it has guidelines, it has a way to be. And so you join this community, you join this belonging system, and kind of give your authority, you give yourself to this authority that the belonging system has, kind of an outer authority. You kind of give yourself to this. And you believe that by being a part of this, you will come to somehow know God. So it's considered the first stage of religion. Oftentimes, our religions stay at this stage. The next stage that he suggests is that when people belong to a belonging system, belong to a community of faith like that, they begin to experience God. And they have an experience of the holy, an experience of the wonder, and begin to speak from that experience. And they develop what you might want to call an inner authority. They speak not so much from what the outer authority of the belonging system is, but they begin to speak from this inner authority that comes from the experience that they've had of the holy. In the religious tradition, that's oftentimes referred to as the prophets. The first stage is oftentimes referred to as the law. In the Jewish tradition, you read the scriptures, there was the law, then there were the prophets. There's a third stage. I'll get to that in a second. But the prophets were those who came from that system. They came from that religious tradition. They were shaped and formed by it. And through it, they encountered the holy. They met God and began to speak from that experience. Sometimes we refer to the mystics as those kind of people too. Mystics are those in the spiritual tradition who somehow have an experience of God, and it's from there that they speak. Whether you refer to them as prophets or mystics, what oftentimes happens, though, is there begins to be a little bit of a conflict that can go on. Because sometimes what someone who's been transformed by this experience of the holy begins to call the belonging system to something broader, to something wider. But sometimes we want to stay with the belonging system because it protects our ego. You know, sometimes the ego wants to say no to things to protect itself. The soul is about saying yes and expanding. And that second stage calls us to that expansion, calls us to that transformation. Not to deny, though, that there's going to be friction and tension in that. The third stage is oftentimes referred to as the wisdom tradition. It's what the phrase is used in the Hebrew scriptures, the wisdom tradition. It's that it's those who come to an ability in their lives to live in the paradox of what sometimes seem like opposites, to live in the midst of the tension of what seems to be this or that. And they're able to live in the tension of this and that. It's not either or. Perhaps it's this and that. It's not an easy place to be. Wisdom is not something that comes to us through learning or through study or through knowledge. You can't go to college and get a degree in wisdom. Wisdom seems to be something that just develops in our lives. We need experience of life, it seems, to come to that sense of wisdom. Wisdom is something that we await for. We wait on. It comes to us. It's why in the early church, the word for wisdom was a feminine word. It was the word Sophia. It is that wondrous sense of the feminine part of all of us, that sense of awaiting, that sense of awaiting to give birth, waiting for this wonder to come to us. And so we wait upon this wisdom in the midst of the tension, in the midst of what seems like at times opposites. Jesus was someone who came from that wisdom tradition. Not the only person, there's many people in our tradition who come from this wisdom tradition, but they're able to balance that. And so Jesus, in the gospel today, it's really a scene, in my opinion, between that belonging, first stage religion, and the second, the prophetic, the mystic, the transformation, the inner authority stage of religion. Because Jesus says, you have heard it said. He's speaking to people from his tradition, from his community, from his belonging system, saying, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. They're probably all saying, yeah. But I say, there's something more. You know, we may not hear the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth the way they would have heard it. For us, that sounds like revenge. But what it really was a first stage step out of chaos into some sort of civilization. It was saying that, you know, in ancient cultures, you come and steal my sheep. Well, I don't have a right then to go burn down your house. This is saying, okay, if I steal your sheep, then you have something you deserve that's even. An eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. Let's not let this get out of hand. It brought about basic civilization. It was a step in the right direction. But Jesus is saying, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, if someone slaps you on the cheek, turn the other. Someone takes your coat, give them your cloak as well. Jesus is calling those in his community, his belonging system, to something new, to something deeper, to something more in their lives. And that's the call, I think, that we have in our lives. In the Jewish scriptures, it's called the law, the prophets, and wisdom. Richard Rohr, one of my favorite spiritual writers, refers to it as the first stage of religion being a belonging system with an outer authority, the second stage being a kind of an experience of the holy, prophetic, mystical, with an inner authority. And the third is that sense of wisdom being able to live in the midst of the tension, being able to live in the midst of what sometimes seems like paradox, and yet we can live there and wait and trust that wisdom will come about. We need wisdom in our world today. We need it in our capital. We need it in our nation. We need it in our religious traditions. We need it in the Anglican Communion. And I wish to God we call forth leaders who call us forth to wisdom. Because people with wisdom, we don't always accept well. Because they don't respond to either or. They live in the tension of the both and that's a challenge. And yet I think that's what the Gospels call us to live into that and await for this wisdom. When I was a young high school student, I went to a parochial school and we learned religion. And there was a phrase used then that was called salvation history. We studied salvation history. The idea being that we didn't just necessarily go in and study the book of Genesis or the book of this or the book of that, but we were studying salvation history. We're studying a history of the Judeo-Christian experience of God. We read this history, beginning with the Hebrew Scriptures and reading it on through to the New Testament. This idea that we're reading a story, we're reading a history of a people and their experience of God. And both that salvation history, that way of looking at Scripture as a story, looking at it as history, Sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that history is really like that. That history is something you walk through, you finish one stage, you go to the next. You finish the next stage, you go to the next. Just like Richard Rohr's sense of the belonging system, the prophet transformational system, the wisdom tradition, or the Jewish words of the law, the prophets, and wisdom. We can tend to think that we can walk through those like they're stages. Like first I get to the law part, okay, now I move to the next part, because I'm finished with that, then I move to the next part. But I don't know about you, but my experience of life has indicated to me that history doesn't seem to go that way. We may study it that way, but I think history and the stories of our lives are not linear. They don't seem to be straight lines. Do you think? I think they're more either use it for a circle, circular, or spiral. Life to me seems to be we move, but we go back a little bit. We move, we go back a little bit. And there are parts of our lives that are in different places. Parts of our lives, to use this religious language, could still be in the belonging system. Parts of our lives may be in the prophetic way. Some of our lives may be in the wisdom. Parts of our lives can be in different places. I don't think it's so neatly cut out as like a straight line. I think it's more circular. I think our lives kind of move in a different kind of way. Do you think? I mean, that's the way I think the spiritual life is lived. We move and we kind of go back. We move and we move back. This, to me, is best shown. And again, Richard Rohr, I want to kind of conclude with this image because I think it's very powerful. Richard Rohr suggests this idea as well, that we move more like a wheel or a circle in our lives. He tells a story of being in Europe years ago when he was at a cathedral. I forget where he said this was. I haven't remembered. But he said he looked at this cathedral, and over the doorway was this wheel. And it was called the Wheel of Fortune. You know the Wheel of Fortune? You may know the TV show, but that's not what he was talking about here. But more and more ancient understanding of the Wheel of Fortune. And on this wheel, if you could picture it, over the cathedral door, on top was carved into the stone this image, and again, it's open to interpretation, this image of what he saw as someone who was like sitting secure, sitting rather delighted with themselves. Either it could look like a king or God or someone who was okay on top of this wheel. Then over here, carved into the stone, was this figure who was like falling. And you could see fear in the face, falling off the top of that wheel. And at the very bottom of the wheel was carved into the stone this figure of someone who was just had hit rock bottom. She couldn't even look up. It's like the whole thing had just crumbled. And then on this side of the wheel, coming up this side, was this other figure with a bit of a smile on her face reaching up to the top. The sense of security on top, the sense of falling, the sense of hitting the bottom, the sense of climbing. The suggestion is that that is the circle of life. That is the wheel that we live our lives on. And the truth of that circle, of that wheel is, as Richard Rohr shares, is stay on the wheel. Stay on the wheel. Stay on that circle. Because at all points of that wheel, we may say, I'm getting off this. I'm beginning to wonder if God has anything to do with any of the stuff I'm going through in my life right now. I've hit rock bottom sometimes. I don't even see where God is. Or I'm starting to fall away from God. Or I'm reaching for God. We may want to get off the wheel. But the idea, the wisdom of this is, stay on the wheel. Stay on the wheel. Stay in that circle. And keep moving. And keep moving. And keep moving. It's the spiritual journey that we're called to live and experience in our lives. Some suggest that some of the large, if you go to cathedrals anywhere in the world, you'll see oftentimes a large window, oftentimes referred to as the rose window. There's different names for this window. Some suggest that large window in the great cathedrals is kind of a descendant of this wheel of fortune. This idea that life is this rhythm. It is this circle. Stay on the wheel. Stay on the wheel. So as we gather together today, Jesus invites us to hear those words. You have heard it said, but I'm calling you to something more. Bishop Curry said it to us a couple of weeks ago when he suggested, you know, we're all born into the human family, That's not too challenging to do. We're all human. But God is inviting us to God's family, to live in the dream, to live the vision, to live the way God calls us, to live the way Jesus calls us. As we gather together today, I invite you to continue to walk that journey. May we walk the journey together. May we all stay on the wheel. Stay on the wheel together as we walk this journey of faith, continuing to move and not being frustrated when it doesn't keep going forward. Sometimes it slips a little back and then it moves forward again. But let's stay on the wheel and continue living into the dream, the vision that God has for all of us.